Welcome back to the Media Community Club podcast. I'm John Kissel. With me tonight is Drew Landry.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Yeah, we've been without Drew on our podcast here for a little bit, and we're happy to welcome back. And we're also welcoming back return trips to Westeros. Here at the Media Community Club, you know, we normally talk about movies, but we cut our teeth in the podcasting world, you know, of which we've taken such a big chunk out of. We cut our teeth on Game of Thrones, and House of the Dragon premiered on Sunday night. We're not going to do what we did with Game of Thrones, which last aired in 2019. We did weekly recap episodes of that. A lot of nonsensical jabs and japes. A good time was had by all, I think, in those podcasts. We tended to stuff an inappropriate amount of people onto those. And tonight it's just going to be me and Drew, but we'll try and add more people as we go throughout the season. Like I said, we're not going to do week-to-week recaps. We're going to do this premiere episode, and then I think what we'll probably do is we'll skip next week and then do two episodes and then another episode just for the finale. It's going to be 10 episodes. Mm-hmm. This is a smaller story than the entire, you know, 8-season Game of Thrones series, but I expect it to go for, I don't know, I actually don't know, 2 or 3 seasons?
Yeah.
Maybe a little longer? Who knows? The first thing to ask before we get started in this premiere episode of House of the Dragon is, Drew, have you thought about Game of Thrones at all since the series ended?
You know, I actually have. Once the series ended, I went out and bought the books, and I actually went out and bought the House of Dragon way before the series was even announced. So I was very much interested in the canon, I guess we would say. Mm-hmm. As because I heard a lot of talk about how, you know, things started to get away from the books and all that. And so I was curious as to how far that they've got. And so I've been thinking about it. I never was a Martin fan until I read the book. And, you know, he's a great author. So, yeah, his books are large, but they read pretty quick. And so I'm thinking I might be the only one out of the club who has thought about Game of Thrones since the not so great ending of the last season.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, it's such a silly thing to be irritated about how a TV show ended, but I don't know, I can't help it.
Yeah,
it does still irritate me that really just everybody involved, craftspeople, actors, seem to be taking their job on Game of Thrones extremely seriously, and the only people that weren't were the people who were writing it and dictating where the show ended up.
Yeah,
and that just, it continues to be very frustrating. And I think it's been borne out by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, the previous showrunners of Game of Thrones, them basically having no real post-Game of Thrones career thus far. D.B. Weiss made a small coming-of-age movie for Netflix that really just came and went. I mean, good for them for being able to parlay their Game of Thrones stuff into huge development deals for places like Netflix that probably didn't pan out in any way for those companies. So they made it an obscene amount of money, and who knows what they're going to put out.
Yeah.
It's not that Game of Thrones wasn't often great. It's just they just so clearly got burnt out by the end of it.
Yeah.
And maybe they haven't recaptured their creative spark. Maybe they will. Who knows?
But, you know, I saw an interview with Martin because, you know, he's done so many. And, you know, throughout the time when Thrones was being produced and being aired, you know, you can always find his interviews on YouTube. And I was just clicking through. Of course, you get yourself in a little, you know, down a hole with all these types of videos that you can find. And I saw one where he was being asked, you know, did you want it to end? And he says, no, I wanted this to go on for, you know, 10, 11, 12 seasons, you know, go 15 seasons. But, you know, Benioff and Weiss had other plans, is kind of what he said, that they're the ones who wanted to end it, not him. So, you know, Martin had a bigger vision. Of course, if he was ever motivated by his vision, maybe he would have continued writing the books instead of having a guessing game.
An 11 season series, that's just not how TV works.
Yeah.
With like this scale of, you wouldn't have been able to hold on to the actors for that long. I mean, Game of Thrones is over and done.
Yep.
And Benioff and Weiss have nothing to do with this new series. This new series, House of the Dragon, is run by Ryan Condal and Miguel Sapochnik. Sapochnik directed some of the most action-packed episodes of Game of Thrones, like Battle of the Bastards, like Hard Home, mm-hmm. like the finale of season 6.
Yeah.
He directed a big chunk of the final season, which, you know, for all its problems, wasn't poorly directed by any means. And then Ryan Condal is more of an unknown factor. His credits include a lot of rock adjacent properties like the Hercules and Rampage, and that's pretty much it. So he's a bit of an unknown quantity. Whereas Sapochnik, I don't know that he's going to be directing all of the episodes, the 10 episodes in the first season, but he seems like a steady hand. Whereas Condal, I mean, we'll just have to wait and see with him.
Yeah.
The setting for the show is about 100 years after Aegon's Landing and about 200 years prior to the events of Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. which I think is great because there are likely to be very few, if zero, and like annoying winks, like this character meeting this character or... Yeah. Just overly cute stuff like that would just be extremely annoying. Fan service, patting Game of Thrones close watchers on the heads. Yes, we see you and we know that you get your little boners off of feeling smart. It doesn't seem possible that they could do any of that. And if they do, I think that's going to be like an automatic "your show sucks" big red flag. They try, and we're going to talk about at the very end, we're going to talk about one way that it does kind of connect Game of Thrones to House of the Dragon, even though there's just no reason for them to, I don't think. This being TV, this being a spinoff, the format kind of dictates that you have to have some kind of connective tissue, but I really just don't feel like it's necessary. The environment and the general locations is enough. You don't need to tie anything in. I really don't want any of that. Drew, I mean, I've kind of salted the earth here, but are you hoping for any kind of like backfilling of like a Game of Thrones hanging thread? Not that there necessarily was any.
Yeah.
Do you want anything like that? Do you want Game of Thrones or the Song of Ice and Fire books?
You know, that's a good question. I think my initial thought is, with the little tip of the hat, little Easter egg that they did at the end of this first episode, that's probably the backfilling that's necessary. I think if it, you know, once the Targaryen story goes on, and it's needed in the story for one of them to talk to a Baratheon or to talk to a Highgarden or, you know, to, you know, those from Hightower or from Old Town. If that's necessary within the story and important to the characters, then by all means. But as far as like these little tip of the hat, these little things, oh hey, you've been watching, you know who Rickon Stark is, you know who, you know about the Lannisters. That's sort of just out of nowhere is just unnecessary, and I don't think that should be in there. But if it plays into the story, we'll let it go. Fair game.
Yeah, I really don't need any of that. where Game of Thrones, I think, really got into trouble towards the end is they got really concerned with pleasing the fans, giving the fans what they expected, giving the fans what they wanted. And I take a David Chase Sopranos tack towards that, where the fans are being rewarded by watching the show that you're presenting to them. It's whatever you want to do, great. And the fans can accept it or argue amongst themselves, but they don't deserve anything. They don't need any kind of extra allowance.
This show is about the Targaryens. This show is about the Targaryen rule. And if other characters come in that are important to that, sure. But we don't need any type of fan service or anything like that just because they watch the show.
Absolutely. Okay, we're now going to be joined by Sean Riley, a veteran of our Game of Thrones marathon discussions. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you. Been a while.
We're going to have you two for two this week, right?
You know, there's a good chance. I went three for three on the movies this week. Okay. So a good chance I see you tomorrow.
All right. Good stuff.
Very nice.
We haven't quite dug into the meat of the House of the Dragon episode yet, but something we've been bouncing back and forth, Drew and I. Have you thought about Game of Thrones at all since it ended?
No, not really. A cultural phenomenon, I think about Mad Men more. Mm-hmm. I think about Breaking Bad more. I haven't even seen all of The Wire, but it comes up more.
That's a really good point in that those shows were about something. And Game of Thrones, kind of just turned into spectacle, dragons and zombies, et cetera, et cetera. So it'll be interesting to see if House of the Dragon actually has anything to say other than, the dragons and the costumes and the spectacle of it all and just the high fantasy dollars thrown on the screen. And I don't know, I'm not optimistic necessarily, but we'll just have to bide our time and see. We also were saying that we're glad that Benioff and Weiss have nothing to do with this series. Their fingerprints are not on this at all. Maybe they have a producer credit because of, HBO rights. New blood invested in House of the Dragon, and they might have more in-depth plans for how their show goes instead of limping towards the finish line, as Game of Thrones did. So jumping into the episode, quick thoughts around the horn. What did you guys think of this premiere, Drew?
I thought it was a good start.
Riley?
It was a better first episode than the first episode of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we'll definitely do some comparisons to the first season in general of Game of Thrones. In this, the money is definitely there.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
When we did Game of Thrones recaps, we would rotate between the different areas of the world, but I think an asset of this show is going to be that it's more or less located in a single location. From the pilot of Game of Thrones, you're already split up and divided into vastly different places all over the entire world. Whereas here, you're just focused on King's Landing. And like I said, I think that's going to enable the show to dig in deeper into these characters as opposed to having to split time between three dozen people in a dozen different locations. And we have, I would say, three main characters at this point. We have King Viserys, who's played by Paddy Considine. He seems like a nice enough guy, but a king who is probably not, probably in over his head, I would say. He doesn't lash out when he's slighted or insulted. He kind of just lets stuff pass, which, it's probably exactly what I would do, not make a big deal out of everything, but these things seem to have a way of accumulating, and then all of a sudden he has to respond. He's a doting husband to a heavily pregnant wife, Ama, and he's got a festering boil on his back that won't heal, which I'm sure doesn't mean anything metaphorically. And then we also have Prince Daemon, played by Matt Smith. He is Viserys' brother and the presumptive heir to the throne. He is the commander of the Goldcloaks, a chest-thumping guy, leads his men into battle. They all seem to love him, but the level-headed advisors on King Viserys' council think he's dangerous and reckless and don't want him to be king. And then we have Princess Rhaenyra, who is King Viserys' teenage daughter. She's played by Millie Adcock. She comes off as unambitious. She has she's doing the thing that Game of Thrones started to do later in its run, where she has like a meme ready line of something about cake. I don't know, something corny and stupid.
Something about cake.
Yeah, exactly. A wine mom Instagram meme. Pretty standard medieval story trope of she would prefer to be a knight than a wife and a mother. She's like redoing the Arya stuff. She resents her father's constant worrying about having a son, and then at the end of the episode, she's named the heir when Daemon is caught belittling Viserys' dead son. I haven't read this. I mean, this isn't exactly a whole book. It's a piece of a book. Drew, you said you had read this?
I've read up to it. Like, this is the, like they started on the part that I hadn't got to yet.
Okay, gotcha. And Riley, I'm assuming no.
I'm insulted. but no, I don't.
I don't read, right?
I never learned to read.
I mean, yeah, why not start with a culture that does a lot of AEs in their names at every opportunity? Yeah. We'll get you nice and settled for English. Okay, so none of us really know what's going to happen. None of us really have any preconceived notions of who these characters are. So is anybody, who's popping off the screen at this early stage? If anybody, it's totally fine. If not, if it's all just satisfactory wigs and armor. Riley, anybody popping?
Well, I mean, Matt Smith is certainly the most famous actor in the group, yeah. Being from The Crown. So, I mean, anyone who you know you're familiar with, I think, is going to at least stand out a little bit. Like you said, with the king, he's almost too mild-mannered to stand out. But, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a flaw of his. That's kind of the kind of king you want during peacetime. It's just... when it's clearly about to not be peacetime anymore. The girl's good. You know, I think they've dressed her up to look like she's probably 14 or 15. It's all online said she's supposed to be 11 at this point.
No.
But I think the show has her as a little bit older.
I do know they're gonna at some point, maybe very soon, there's gonna be a time jump. And she's gonna be recast. And her handmaiden, Alicent Hightower, is also going to be recast by Olivia Cooke, who is like a semi-famous actress.
Isn't she also in The Crown?
I don't know. There's a range of like 20-something English actresses that I like. Lily Collins, and I can't remember who was who.
Well, the girl who plays Rhaenyra right now is 22. Like they could have just not made her look like she's exactly. 11.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah. All these timelines have been banged out. So, I mean, if she's supposed to be 11, that's what she was written as. This was the case in Game of Thrones too, where like Daenerys was supposed to start the show at like 13 or 14. Yeah. Yeah, and you just never bought it. So they're doing like the 90210 stuff where they just tell you how old the character is and you just believe it, even when they have like crow's feet and gray hair. Okay, I didn't realize she was supposed to be that young. But I do agree that she's like like a striking presence, I think. Like she's got an interesting face, which I think goes a long way, you know, under the wig. Speaking of wigs, where are we at on wigs? Because everybody's got that. The white hair is tough.
It looks best on the black guy with dreads.
Yeah, it does.
I totally agree with that.
Yep. He pulls it off the best.
I have no idea if that person's going to be that important of a character down the line. I assume he will based on who he's married to, but we'll see.
I mean, you kind of think it's not going to go well for his family based on the complete absence of black people in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. You know, 100 years, 169 years, however many years it said before Daenerys. You know, they got a long time.
Yeah.
Drew, anybody jumping out?
I actually confused Paddy Considine with the guy who, you know, Paddy Considine plays. He's also in The Death of Stalin. He has a role in there. Yeah. But I actually confused him for the silent guy in Fargo who...
Stormare?
Yeah.
Now that you say it, he does look just a little bit like him.
Yeah, I kept thinking, I've seen that dude in other movies and in that one episode of Seinfeld, except no, that's not him at all. So that was the sticking out moment for me was that, hey, that guy looks familiar. But then it was, you know, nobody in there. I do have to think that, the jouster who defeated Daemon.
Yeah, Sir Cole, I want to say was his name.
Okay, yeah, probably from Dorne. I think that guy might, you know, that could be a prelude to further roles for him throughout this series. So. Mm-hmm. That, you know, like these little smaller parts, I've always noticed that throughout Game of Thrones, they have like a bigger play, you know, later on. And I'm just thinking, you know, what role will he play? What role will the daughter of the Hand of the King, is it Alicent Hightower? Is that, yeah, Alicent. Yeah. What could she possibly be doing in the next two or three episodes that could be consequential? But also the queen who was never crowned. I have a feeling that she's going to play a big role in this as well. I think this is the kickoff of what's often known as the Dance of Dragons, that civil war. Right. And so I think that's what this is going to boil into, but. You know, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. That's Rhaenys you're talking about.
Rhaenys, yeah.
She's played by Eve Best. I think they're going for an Olenna Tyrell vibe with her.
Mm.
You could see her giving... Again, Game of Thrones, they started doing this meme shit later in its run. Where it just seemed very... It all seemed a little calculated. Like the promotional team. And you could see her potentially being the source of some of that.
Sure.
Especially based on how successful Olenna Tyrell was able to like fulfill that role.
Yeah. That's true.
You know, whatever. It got a little annoying. Especially when it gets translated to like Nancy Pelosi doing something. Just first.
As I was reading on the series prior to, I kept on seeing things about everybody has the same name and they weren't going to adjust names the way they did in Game of Thrones. And all I could do is think of Hartman and how much difficulty he has remembering any names of any characters on shows. And the confusion that was going to set forth would probably frustrate him into not watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a straight troll job by George R.R. Martin. Everything has had the same motif of a name. Not great.
Yeah.
Notable scenes. So we mentioned comparing the look of this show to the first season of Game of Thrones. And nowhere is that more apparent than in the tournament, compared to the tournament that was in like the fourth and fifth episode of the first season of Game of Thrones. Yeah. Game of Thrones looks like it's filmed on a soccer field with like a Renfair tent, and there's about 20 people there.
Yeah.
Here, I mean, it's you know, it's probably mostly CGI, but the tournament ground itself looks real. There's a lot of people in the crowd. There's like an actual dais for the VIPs to sit in.
Mm-hmm.
It looks momentous. It looks important. Some of that, I mean, some of that might be the way that the kingdom has kind of fallen to shit over the next 200 years.
Yeah.
But it's really apples and oranges. That first season of Game of Thrones doesn't lose anything in quality for as chintzy as it occasionally looked. But wow, you can really see the difference of a tremendous amount of production design.
Yeah, I think that would be the explanation that they would give, is that, well, look at the kingdom 200 years before Robert's Rebellion and all this, and then look what it was before the Mad King and all that, you know. So I think that would be the storyline explanation, but in all reality, you're exactly right.
I don't even think they'd offer a storyline. They'd probably just say, no, we didn't have any damn money.
Yeah.
They're just... You know, the tournament then, like, did not even look as good as the tournaments in the Heath Ledger classic, A Knight's Tale.
Oh, goodness. A classic.
That movie's awesome, man. Shannon Sossaman is bad.
You know, I've never seen A Knight's Tale. I've heard... Oh,
check it out, man. Jeffrey Chaucer, okay. You know, Heath Ledger, Shannon Sossaman.
Who? Shannon Sossaman. That sounds.
She was super hot in like three movies.
Yeah. Oh, was she in? She was in 40 Days and 40 Nights.
Yes.
Okay. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Catholic rotation and sex comedies. That's what we need. Other notable scenes: we see Daemon and Rhaenyra, who at this point in the series, I have the bare sense of what happens in like the history of this saga. It sure seems like they're going to be, you know, squaring off.
It felt uncomfortably sexual.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes.
But obviously, yeah, that's, you know, what they do. But yeah, they're clearly going to be put against one another at this point now.
It doesn't really come up in this episode, but pretty important part of being a Targaryen is that you're inbred as shit.
Yeah.
And I mean,
yeah. What's the doctrine? Like the you know, their religion says that incest is bad, but there's a specific doctrine that says it's okay if you're Targaryen.
Yeah.
That was settled. And here's my nerddom here. That was part of what I read. That was settled by Maegor, who's been referenced a few times in that episode. He basically just said, yeah, I'm going to kill you all, or unless you just do it this way. And they just said, okay. So that was really it.
She's 11, and Matt Smith is Matt Smith's age. So he's, like, I don't know, late 30s. So, okay, that probably wouldn't work. But based on those actors, it seems like if you're a Targaryen and you're living by Targaryen rules, there's a very easy scenario. There's a very easy solution to this problem, and it's this uncle and his niece need to marry each other. But I feel like it's very obviously left out of this episode, like pointedly left out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't want to let the new viewers know that our main characters are super into incest until like episode 3 or 4.
Well, yeah, maybe, but I also think, you know, it was more along the lines of brother and sister than it was cousins.
Sure, when they're available, yeah. Like if the boy had lived, if the baby boy had lived,
sure,
then okay, maybe he marries Rhaenyra.
Yeah,
although a lot of time is going to go by until, you know, she can start having children. But
right,
whatever.
And they were also into multiple marriages, so. It's quite possible that, I mean, even though he was supposed to be married to somebody at in the Vale, him being Daemon, the Hand kind of tries to put him down by saying, you know, why aren't you with your wife or whatever. Targaryens, you know, that really shouldn't be much of a put down because that, you know, Aegon had two wives who were his sisters. You know, Maegor had like seven wives who were related to him in some way. So it really, multiple marriages really isn't frowned upon if you're a Targaryen. So I don't really see, you know, whenever he mentioned that, you know, even though it was more along the lines of brother sister, and yet he was already married, him taking a second wife really shouldn't have. You know, I'm also kind of making your point here that, yeah, he probably could have gone after his cousin and still be lawfully wedded to whomever he wanted to.
Yeah, they just kind of whatever they say.
Yeah.
Goes. I did look up just because you got to assume that everybody that has the silver hair is Targaryen in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Viserys is his wife. Aemma is his cousin. So, okay. Yep. But that she's gone forever from the show now, probably never to be brought up again. And they like didn't mention that to be the case there either. So I just find it interesting that they're leaving off this potentially alienating subplot.
That is
in the premiere when it's such an integral part of why this family is so indelible, I guess, in this world.
Mm-hmm.
We meet several dragons. We meet Meraxes, who is Daemon's dragon, who I think, Drew, you can help me out with the nerd stuff. That's one of the original dragons that came over, correct?
I don't remember, but I know that they had a big head skull, that skull of Beryllium. Yeah.
And we also meet Syrax, who is Rhaenyra's dragon. It's helpful that he is gold, like Syrax, the Mortal Kombat character, which I thought was pretty funny. So that's a nice mnemonic device for me. I'll remember that Syrax, if I see a gold dragon, I'll know that it's Syrax. To be determined if he can shoot a computer net out of his chest. Be cool if he could.
I'm going to wait on that.
The childbirth scene... I knew that was going to happen because I had read a review.
Yeah.
Awful. Like one of the worst things I've ever seen in a Game of Thrones related show. So maybe we're just getting that out of the way super early.
Yeah, you could have shown the exact same scene without like parts of stomach being pushed aside to
have her
shoved in.
Or maybe she passes out.
Yeah, or... Even if she doesn't, just go bird's eye and leave it at that. You don't have to like zoom in on the elbow deep in the lady's stomach.
Yeah. And there's just little pieces of it that make it so much worse. Like, Viserys
cutting back and forth between a guy's face getting smashed in while they're cutting her open.
Sure. Yeah. Yep. And like Viserys not ever actually telling her what's about to happen. Or letting her feel like she has like an active role in this, like maybe say you can both die or give the baby a chance. He just makes the decision for her, and then he's like, everything's fine. Slice. That felt like the showrunners really sticking a finger in the viewer's chest. They established that they had as decent a marriage as a couple could in like medieval times. And it's established that she's going to die. That all sounds well and good. And then to just completely take away any choice in the matter for her and have her die, like, screaming. For my money, that was, like, Shireen-level cruelty. Yeah. And I really didn't enjoy that.
It was so hard to watch that scene. Very cringeworthy, and you both are correct that it could have been done in a much better way than how it was done and still be viewable and understandable and meaningful.
Well, was there could have been a meta statement on the women's rights and the abolition of Roe v. Wade. And
I think all that
is it just, that deep, or is it just gross?
I think people are definitely writing about that, but I mean, it would have been filmed before that was the case.
I was going to vote it was just gross, but yeah. You with your actual reasoning.
All right.
But it was already filmed.
The showrunners have been giving interviews. I think they kind of stepped in a little bit about the level of, not that this is sexual violence, it's kind of like adjacent, but they've been giving interviews about the level of sexual violence in the show that will perhaps be in the show or may not be in the show compared to Game of Thrones, which also took some heat first, like several scenes where it just kind of tiptoed into exploitative and unnecessary. The pushback is always, this is a fantasy world. You can make up whatever rules you want. It doesn't always have to be the things that stay consistent in this fantasy world that we're making is that women are horribly oppressed. And also there are dragons. Maybe women aren't horribly oppressed and there are dragons. Like, what difference does it really make?
They did cut a guy's dick off. So at least they're saying that there are penalties.
That is true. That is true. You might get an impromptu D-ball bagging in House of the Dragon World.
Castration.
Another fun scene with fun close-ups. We'll have to see going forward if this, tying it back into the incest, like maybe you can just only offer up so much stuff in your premiere episode before you completely alienate an audience that still like showed up in droves for this episode. There's been big headlines about it's like the biggest premiere in HBO history, I think is what the whatever. So people are watching this show, but we'll see if it carries over.
And then, I don't think they have to worry about slow playing their hand at all either. I mean, it's not like Game of Thrones was, you know, this little engine that could, and now this show is going to capitalize on the promise of Game of Thrones. This is let's cash some more checks.
Yeah. And then the last thing, surely the biggest change from the source material, which again I'm not going to read and I'm never going to know, so I'm just surmising here. Tying in the Song of Ice and Fire and the prophecy of Game of Thrones into the chain of succession, Viserys disinherits Daemon. He makes Rhaenyra his heir, and part of that is he tells her that the original Targaryen who came over and conquered, he had a vision of the White Walkers, et cetera, in the Long Night. And it's the job of the king to make sure that that doesn't happen. I don't know. I can kind of see this going horribly wrong in a way that makes this show worse. But it's probably going to be like some kind of Macbeth thing where, you know, you get the prophecy and the prophecy makes you act in a way that you wouldn't have previously, and then in turn makes the prophecy happen because you knew about it. But I think another way to look at it is we're only one episode in and I don't necessarily have like a rooting interest where like none of these characters are especially likable. Viserys is kind of a boob and Daemon's an ass and Rhaenyra's not too terribly interested. So if she has some kind of like world saving goal, if she's trying to accumulate power for reasons beyond power's sake, then it gives her a rooting interest and like a bit of a leg up. It's not that I think she's going to win. I think she's probably going to lose because there wasn't a queen in Westerosi history that would have come up in Game of Thrones. So the show's kind of setting her up to fail already. And this is like from the premiere setting her up to be like a tragic hero in a not dissimilar way that Daenerys was.
So I don't know if it's because I read your show notes that pointed out that that scene wasn't from the source material, and that was just...
I don't know that.
I thought that him describing the prophecy was to her was might have been the worst scene of the episode. I didn't think it felt genuine. His whole, you know, shifting focus to be like, oh, I'm sorry, I have ignored the fact that I have a daughter for all these years because I've been hoping for a son. It was probably his worst aspect of the episode, and I think she probably should be able to see right through it, and that, you know, I've become your last resort.
Yeah, repair the relationship first and then bring her in to this world-ending apocalypse that your great-great-grandfather had a dream about.
And how are they going to feel next episode when he's sleeping with her best friend?
Sure, yeah. Yep. I kind of wish I hadn't seen trailers, because I have a pretty good sense of how the season's going to go, but you get tiny little drops and threads of it in this premiere. I mean, to sum up, I'm very interested in what's happening. There's a lot of players on the board, and this was always my favorite part of Game of Thrones, was the scheming. I was far more interested generally in like two or three people in a room having like pretty crackling back and forth dialogue, moving the plot forward, as opposed to the bigger action scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that's what this show is going to be. Except with late season Game of Thrones budgets per episodes early in the series in this case.
Mm.
So I feel like there's, just like Game of Thrones, there's just, you know, ways it can go wrong. But I think is like the story as it exists is complete out in the world. Like George R. R. Martin wrote it all. It's all in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they can stick with that and embellish and elongate a little bit here and there, but like they're not going to be able to like completely go off of the trail like Game of Thrones did.
Mm.
I'm just thinking back to like early Game of Thrones, and I feel like I was, even from like the first episode, I was really into Sean Bean as Ned Stark.
Ned, yeah.
I was into those, like the kids were well cast and well portrayed. I don't feel that at this point in this series, but it's one episode in.
No, I feel you on that. I mean, you know, there is no Ned Stark in this. There's no Tyrion. There's, you know, that those compelling characters who have a cause of either nobility or integrity or deep ambition, or maybe I should say reined in ambition as opposed to cutthroat violence, that just isn't there in this episode right then and there. I mean, maybe King Viserys is trying to be that noble leader and trying to be that, but it doesn't really come off that there's that kind of compelling character who you can root for. And if they're trying to make Princess Rhaenyra that person to root for, I'm not quite sure the first episode is really the one to sell us on it.
Yeah.
But you know, we have more to be sold on, so you know, maybe we have to give it a longer chance. But you didn't have to do that really in that first series. I mean, Sean Bean was able to sell the Ned Stark character as, you know, it's always integrity first. And you were able to really get around that.
It gave the viewer like a rooting interest. Like, this is a good family.
Yeah.
Can they stick together in the face of, you know, whatever else is going to come? And right. I don't necessarily think the rooting interest is here. And I do also, I feel like it would have been a bad choice for HBO to pick this story amongst all the other stories that they have in development. I feel like they filmed a pilot starring Naomi Watts and it got scrapped. Or if they didn't film it, then they at least wrote it. It was pretty far along in production, and they scrapped it. And I mean, all credit to Patty Considine, who has done some good work. But Naomi Watts is pretty great.
Yep.
So this story, it just shouldn't be. It shouldn't rhyme with a Daenerys story, where like a woman tries to grasp for power in this world and fails. That just feels like it would be a repeat when it's like a 10,000 year history in this saga. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't have any sense of how long this is going to run. I feel like the season ends with King Viserys dying in some way, natural causes, murder, dragon, who knows. And then it goes from there.
I thought I read like 3 to 5 years versus what did the other one do? Like 10 seasons or something?
Yeah, 8 seasons, yeah. 3 to 5 for this? Okay, yeah, that'd be surprising.
Yeah, well, you know, because there's goalposts here. And like you said, it's fully written. It's not that, you know, we're going to hope that George finishes these books. And that clearly never happened, since I'm not sure he's finished one since this started.
No, 2011 was the last time he finished a book.
Correct. Yeah.
So this one, at least, you know, by not being a novel and just being a, you know, historical tome adjacent to the novels, they have a start and an end.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll be back in 2 weeks to discuss the next two episodes. We'll see where we are then. A solid debut, BB minus, something like that. In the meantime, like I said at the beginning, we usually talk movies. We're going to be recording a podcast about our previous trio of movies here shortly. That trio was 2022 releases, and we're going to talk about The Batman. We're going to talk about Prey. We're going to talk about Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, kind of snuck in there under the wire. And then for our next trio, in honor of the once a decade Sight and Sound top 250 list, where they send out hundreds of requests to recognize critics around the world, Sight and Sound magazine in England, and ask them for their personal top 10 movies. Then they send them back and they'll get collaborated, and Sight and Sound will put it out in the fall, I think, in November. And we're going to do something similar. We have, at the Media Community Club, all listed our top 10s on our website, mediacommunity.club. And we're going to pick from, and that's going to be our pool for this next month and maybe a few months after that as well. And for our next trio, after we talk about Batman and Prey and Chip and Dale, we're going to discuss The Big Lebowski. We're going to discuss, what was the other one? Menace to Society. And Team America World Police. Okay. Lebowski, Team America, Menace to Society. So that'll be on the next trio.
That's a more disjointed trio than Prey, Batman, yes, and Chip and Dale.
Pretty disjointed. MMC favorites. I mean, Transformers the movie could have gotten there. So I'm glad. I'm frankly glad that didn't happen. That got put at the bottom of my list. In the meantime, you can check us out on the internet at MuticaMovie.club, like us on Facebook at MuticaMovieClub, Twitter at MuticaMovieCole, and Instagram at MuticaMovieClub. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Have a good night.